From high above the very edge of the vast Pacific Ocean, this is Hilly Rose wishing you a kind and gentle night and welcoming you to America's most listened to nighttime radio program. Hey, got your tape recorder standing by? Because tonight is a show you're going to want to refer back to a number of times. We have two fascinating guests for you. One is a gentleman that isn't making a lot of appearances these days, but it's the 30th anniversary of the publishing of his book called The 12th Planet, Zechariah Sitchin. And I will be taking calls for Professor Sitchin later in the program, so you want to be listening. Also, tonight, Colin Andrews, who is one of the most respected researchers in the field of crop circles, will talk a little bit about the 2005 crop circles, but more importantly, he is going to reveal to you tonight secrets about crop circles that he has kept for 20 years. 20 years. Get those tape recorders ready to go. One last thing. When we talk to Professor Sitchin, he is going to want to refer you to what's on his website. He says there is proof that man was on Mars. You can find that proof at www.sitchin.com, or you can go to the Coast to Coast AM website and see Professor Sitchin's name. Click on it. It'll take you right to his website, and then you can see for yourself what it is he's talking about. We'll get to the professor and Colin Andrews in just a little bit. The news, the New York strike is over. Hey, whoopee. Especially if you're a New Yorker. It has been cold and freezing. The question becomes, what does it say about labor? Labor gave in on this, and one wonders why. If they're going to go out on strike, why not stay out on strike? They got absolutely nothing but a discussion. Makes no sense. The Patriot Act, speaking of not making any sense, we have two branches, well, actually three branches of government, two branches of Congress. The president has asked for an extension of the Patriot Act. Pass the act. One of the houses of Congress has said, no, we'll give you a 6-month extension. The other branch of Congress said, no, we'll give you a 3-month extension. And so they had a conference. And like good politicians and Congress people, they had an agreement. Not 6 months, not 3 months, 1 month. They're going to extend it 1 month. How is that for a compromise? And now you know why we have such strange laws in our country. By the way, President Bush approved today new dollar coins featuring all 37 of the nation's dead presidents. They'll begin rolling out of the U.S. Mint in 2007. They want to, and they're also going to have an accompanying $10 gold piece for collectors that features former first ladies. They want to make money. That's why they're doing that. Important, or could be important, news that singer Don Ho went to Thailand, you may remember, because he has a very bad heart condition. And he had a procedure that involves multiplying stem cells taken from his blood and injecting them into his heart in hopes of strengthening it. He said it was his last hope, and it worked out for him. And he found out about this on the Internet. So, strange things on the Internet. But it saved Don Ho's life. Something worth looking into, and I hope that George, when he comes back, will do just that. And finally, the flight from hell. So many people are traveling and having problems. I know I flew into Los Angeles tonight, an hour and a half late, but nothing compared to a 45-hour delay. 45-hour delay on an Air India flight. It started Monday of this week. What is today? Thursday? Started Monday when the first plane these folks were on blew a tire on takeoff. They dumped fuel over the ocean, circled back to L.A. International to land in a spray of sparks. On Tuesday, they tried it again, and this time one of the engines wouldn't start. For about 5 hours, travelers sat in the sweltering plane. Flight attendants locked up the drinks. locked up the drinks. They were out there for 5 hours. Some passengers staged a mini revolt. Finally, passengers were taken off the plane, bused to a hotel, arrived at 2:30 in the morning on Wednesday. They overwhelmed the front desk. Some did not get to bed until 4 a.m. The weary travelers returned to LAX later on Wednesday, that's yesterday morning, for their third attempt. A flight set to depart at 1 p.m. was pushed back. It was moved up, and finally, around 4:30 p.m., they took off. Holy moly, 45 hours. Can you believe that? Oh, good heavens. All right, I want to get to our guest quickly. But before I do, I want to do something just a little bit unusual. You know, I've been subbing on this program. Well, I'm in my eighth year of subbing on this program. I guess I'm the longest lasting sub there is. So I'm entitled to some courtesy. And if I want to say something I probably shouldn't say, I'm going to say it. So, engineer there, if you want to put your finger on the button, you can do that. But I want to say something in the great tradition of Howard Stern is naughty and nice. Naughty and nice. Ready? Merry Christmas, George Norrie. Merry Christmas, Art Bell. Merry Christmas, all you guys and gals serving overseas and here in the continental United States. Whew, I did it. Not politically correct. I may get fired as a result of it, but I did it because I wanted to do it. And there you are. And in just a minute, Zechariah Sitchin. It is incredible, really, really incredible to think that it has been 30 years since the book, The 12th Planet, was first published. 30 years. A book that has stood archaeology, history, and a lot of other sciences on its ear. 30 years. The book, you know, I picked it up the other day out of my library, just to reread it a little bit. And it is absolutely compelling, absolutely fascinating, still 30 years later, perhaps even more so, now that we know much more about the heavens and the skies. There is so much in this book, and, you know, there are some who say, well, Sitchin must have, you know, he must have made up some of this stuff. No way. You couldn't. If you read this book, you say to yourself, good heavens, there is no way anybody could make up what is in the 12th planet. And there are a number of other books that were spawned as a result of it. So there have been 50 printings of this book. How many books do you know of, short of the Bible, have had 50 printings over 30 years? And Professor Sitchin, I must ask you, how many languages has it been printed in?
Hi, Haley.
Good evening.
You can just call me Zechariah.
All right, Zechariah. How many languages has the book been printed in?
Oh, I lost count. I think about 24 or 25.
Which is more languages than you read. Now, you read a heck of a lot of them.
Yes. Well, some of them are Greek to me.
Yeah. And you read Greek, so it's okay. Zechariah, we've been friends for a long time, and there are a number of questions that I've wanted to ask, and this is the night. I'm also going to open the lines a little bit later and let the folks who are listening ask you questions that they wanted to ask you over these 30 years.
Okay.
But the very first question I have to ask you is a technical question, and I'll get into some of what's in the book, but how in the world, I mean, I can understand how you learned to read Hebrew. I mean, you lived in Israel for years. It's not too unusual for people to read Hebrew. Of course, ancient Hebrew is a little different kind of thing. But to read the clay tablets of the Sumerians from 6,000 years ago, where did you learn to do this? How did you do this? There are so very few people in the world that can do this.
Well, it's The answer will take up too much of our time because it was a process that required decades. All I'll say is, Hilly, to all your listeners, don't try.
No, I don't think I can't read Egyptian hieroglyphics either. But
it's a lifetime. It's a lifetime undertaking.
All right, a couple of quick emails that I got from fans of yours. But here's one that says, Hilly, I'm a big fan of yours and Mr. Sitchin. A lot of us wonder if Mr. Sitchin is telling all he knows about what he has found over the years, or is he releasing what he has been allowed to release via the government? If you'd ask him about this, it would let us know if we are on some kind of timeline for information to the public who may not understand what is going on at all. In other words, are you at all being censored by the government? So many people believe the government knows a lot more about UFOs, for example, than they tell us.
Well, I'm not a spokesman for the government, but I can assure all my readers that I'm not being constrained or told by anybody except maybe higher authority in the spiritual, religious, or faith sense, what to write at what time. And as to the key element of the question is, have I already written or spoken at my various previous seminars and told everything that I know or I think I know? And the answer is no. I've been working the last few years on at least one more book, and in that book I hope to conclude to tell what I believe really happened in the past and what is going to happen in the future.
In other words, you're going to predict the future?
Well, not predict, but foretell. I think is the difference.
As your reading of the Sumer tablets, is that correct?
The tablets, the Bible, the Old Testament, the New Testament's Book of Revelation, and all other available sources.
You know, I have another email here, which makes me believe that there are many people that understand your theories, but probably have never read your book, and more's the pity. The book, I believe, still is available at Amazon.com and in bookstores all over the place.
Right.
But the question was, it would be interesting if I would ask you where the Anunnakis are today. After all, they arrived on Earth, created Homo sapiens for their own use,
right,
and then had a limited nuclear exchange in the Sinai. You know, what happened? Well, you've got a couple of chapters in your book called When the Gods Fled from Earth, so pretty much you've answered the question there, but do you have any further thoughts on where the Anunnakis are today?
Oh, I do have not just thoughts. I think I have some facts and figures, figures being mostly matters of dates, and that's what I intend to tell in my hopefully forthcoming book.
So they still exist, as far as you know?
Oh, yes, they do.
Okay. Now, these, for people who may not have read your books, these Nephilims came from the 12th planet, which is a planet quite near our planet, and they descended to Earth. I'm not trying to tell your story here, but just quickly to state it, and they... how shall I say, intermingled, intermixed. They brought knowledge to the Homo sapiens that we could not have had any other way. Basically, is that correct?
Well, that's basically the story, yeah.
All right.
The story at the beginning. That's the beginning of the story.
That's all right. Now, the end may be something...
May I point out, Hilly, that the book that you have mentioned, and I appreciate your very kind words about it, was the first book of 10. There are 10 books by now, and each book that follow the 12th planet, builds on the previous one, continues the story, looks at the events that happened from different viewpoints or different geographical areas. There's a book called The Lost Realms that deals with the Americas. There's a book titled Divine Encounters that deals with the subject of divine encounters and dreams and visions and angels. There's a book titled The Lost Book of Enki, which tells the story in the words of Enki, one of the leaders of the Anunnaki who came here, in his own words. So the subject has been covered in many ways and in many stages. So I would like to point this out to your listeners, so that they shouldn't think that just to remain at phase one, because there's been phase two and phase three, and that's gradually leading to a foretelling of what's to come, which would be hopefully the last phase.
Well, you point out in your books that 12 is a very important number.
Yes.
And so I hope you will write 12 books.
Well, the one that I'm working on would be the 11th. Actually, it would be the 12th, because there's a book hardly known, which is titled Of Heaven and Earth, which are the proceedings of a Sitchin Studies Day that took place in Denver a few years ago. So if you include that, then it, the coming one would be the 12th.
All right, I have only 2 minutes left in this segment, but I ask people to go to your website and to look at the pictures, the NASA pictures of what's
from Mars. From Mars, yes.
And you say that this makes the rest of it irrelevant, because it proves once and for all that there are man-made structures on Mars. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, except I always try to find another term rather than man-made, because if man means, you and I, or somebody like us, then it's really the Anunnaki, so Anunnaki made.
All right. What is there? Now, you've pointed this out to NASA. You've tried to communicate with them, but they refuse to communicate back to you. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know if they refuse. They just don't answer.
They just don't answer you. Well, you know, if I send them some email is one thing, but someone of your stature to send them email and say, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? That's pretty important. Now, the pictures that are there, you have enlarged and enhanced, but you also have included the actual NASA photos for people to see for themselves.
They can click and go straight to the NASA website that has those photographs.
Well, what
which is quite a complex thing to do, but by clicking on my website, they can just get there.
Well, what's about these pictures? I mean, to me, they look like sand dunes.
These are pictures taken by the rover, one of the two that were sent to Mars recently. I think that it's the one called Spirit that was stuck for a while in some kind of a valley or I don't know. Anyway, some depression and in the surface of Mars, and then climbed up and reached the rim of that depression or valley, and the camera started to sort of scan the landscape to see what does one see from the top of that rim of that depression. And NASA posted the photographs, with some identification. They such and such, picture number such and such, etc. And some of them show, without doubt, what we would call artificial structures, walls, angled walls, a tower-like structure, etc. And what I did was I posted them on my website, sitchin.com, and just asked a question. I said, would would Mr. NASA please explain what this is? And nobody did to this day.
And you believe that this proves that it was some kind of intelligent force that created these sand structures?
These are not sand structures. These may be sand-covered structures, but these are walls, angled walls, 90-degree walls, rounded towers, rectangular areas.
I've got to stop here, which proves that it's some intelligence.
Intelligent work by somebody that had some technology and technical ability.
Okay. Zechariah Sitchin is our guest. We'll take your calls after the break. And our guest is Zechariah Sitchin. Coming up in the next hour, Colin Andrews. This is your opportunity. Professor Sitchin doesn't make too many appearances, and especially on this program. So tonight, I'm going to leave most of this portion of this program, this half hour, for you to get your calls in. And lots of you are online. So we'll get to prove Zechariah Sitchin right after this. Hilly Rose in for George Norrie, and I should tell you that the phone lines will ring and ring and ring, and don't give up, because you'll go directly on the air once I answer them. So just keep on ringing, and we'll do what we can for you. All right, Zechariah Sitchin is my guest. Zechariah, at the very end of your book, The 12th Planet, you use these words: if the extraterrestrials created us, who created them on their planet?
Right.
You wrote that 30 years ago. You've had 30 years to think that one through.
Right.
You any closer to an answer?
Well, the answer is given by and large in a book titled The Lost Book of Enki.
So you're saying people should go out and buy the book? You're not going to give us the answer?
Of course. They have to buy the book.
Terrible. All right, let's go east of the Rockies. Hi, where are you calling from, please? Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
Hello, Hilly Rose. My name is Robert, and I'm calling from north of Boston, Massachusetts, WRKO Radio.
Very cold up there right about now, right?
Inside the home, it's nice, though.
That's good. Yes. Robert, what do you want to ask Zechariah?
Well, Mr. Sitchin, Zechariah Sitchin, hello. How are you today?
Thank you.
Yes, first of all, I wanted to make a statement. It may sound profound. I had two direct encounters with Jesus Christ in 1998. Shortly thereafter, I was touched by a higher intelligence, and I was informed that I'm a malach. And I understand you understand Hebrew and Greek, therefore you would understand malach. And I would make another statement, as to say,
what is your question, sir?
Yes, well, the question is, what do you make of all this? And I'd like to make one more statement.
No, it's just a question. Okay, go ahead. Zechariah, do you want to answer that?
Well, malach is usually translated angel in our literature. Literally, it means an emissary. And the answer to this gentleman's question is given in my book, Divine Encounters. Yes, the higher powers, we can call it God or whatever anybody wants to call it, higher power, as some call it, the intelligent designer, does act through angels, through messengers, through emissaries.
All right, let's go to the wild card line. Hi, where are you calling from, please?
Michigan.
Yes, sir. Your name?
Eric.
All right, Eric, what did you want to ask Zechariah?
I'd like to ask him what his take is on the recent discovery of methane on Saturn's moon Titan, and what that could mean to the so-called theory of fossil fuels.
Which theory?
The Well, they found methane gas on Saturn's moon Titan.
Yes.
And that.
Well, that shows that the elements of life, as we know it, exist throughout the solar system, if not throughout the universe, and that is one of the corroborations of the Sumerian tales with which my first book and the following ones begin, and that is that a planet that intruded on our solar system brought what the Sumerians called the seed of life into our solar system. So all these latest discoveries about the makeup of the outer planets and their moons, discoveries on Mars, which Hilly Rose mentioned a few minutes ago, discoveries that the solar system does not end with Pluto. All those keep corroborating and corroborating the Sumerian knowledge on which my books have been based.
All right, let's move along here west of the Rockies. Hi, where are you calling from, sir?
Hi, Hilly.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Steve in Northern California.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Steve.
It's my honor to be speaking with you for the first time. I've heard you for over 10 years. You do a great job.
Well, thank you, but our time is limited with Professor Sitchin. Do you have
a question? I'll be quick. Zechariah, you are an icon. I understand that the Sumerians just sort of appeared out of apparently nothing. We went from the Stone Age to the Sumerians with written language and with all these scientific and cultural arts. And
well, not the Sumerians. They came from some place to that valley between the two rivers, the Euphrates and the Tigris. But their civilization, you're right, their civilization appeared, the word used not just by me but by other scholars, out of nowhere, suddenly, without precedent, etc., etc. And when one wonders how, or could ask them, how did it happen, they say, all, that's actually a quote, all that we know was granted to us by the Anunnaki, a term that literally means those who from heaven to earth came.
Good. All right, let's go to the first-time caller line. Hi, where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm calling from Chicago, Illinois.
Yes, sir. And your first name?
This is Shannon.
Okay, Shannon, what's your question for Zechariah?
I would like to ask Zechariah, what is his opinion or what is his theory concerning the pyramids on Mars and the pyramids in Egypt in connection with prophecy of mankind, you know, the solar system going through the photon belt, or, you know, the Nephilim or the Elohim, you know, the fallen ones or the angels?
Well, the way you pose the question indicates to me that you have read many other books besides mine with all kinds of their own theories, though the word Nephilim is the Hebrew word for those that the Sumerians called Anunnaki, literally meaning Nephilim, those who came down, who descended from heaven to earth. The Elohim is another term for those so-called divine beings that were considered as gods with a small g in antiquity.
Well, and, I'm going to be on the radio, so I just called in.
Hello?
Somehow he dropped off. Let's move along here to the wild card line. Hi.
Yes. Thank you, Rose, for having Sitchin on. And Sitchin, thank you for being on. This is William from Madison, Wisconsin. In one of your books, you mentioned that the Sumerian tongue was related to Hungarian and Finnish. Very inflectional. I will want to mention a couple of words. Anunnaki, Enenekiet, four seers, Nephilim, Ne'ulimet, the ones above, on and on. Yes, the Sumerians may have come down from up north after the Ice Age, suddenly appeared there, but they may have developed further north originally. How do you answer, young fellow?
Well, I thank you for using some of those words on the air. I read them, but I never heard them spoken. And that is a fact that three languages Finnish, Hungarian, and Basque in Spain do not belong to any known language group, and they are only similar to ancient Sumerian. And I have explained, at least in my talks, if not yet in my books, that after the nuclear holocaust that brought to an end the Sumerian civilization in 2024 BC, they spread. There was a Sumerian diaspora taking their language, their knowledge, and their civilization with them, and apparently they reached those three countries.
All right, let's go to the east of the Rockies. Hi, this is Hilly Rose, and you're on Coast to Coast AM with Zechariah Sitchin.
Oh, yes. Hi, this is Karen in Houston. How are you?
Just fine, Karen.
All right. I've got a question. Is there any kind of a museum display or anything like that that gathered in or will be gathering in Anunnaki and Sumerian artifacts and such that we could maybe see?
I'm sorry. I didn't understand the question.
Is there a museum where people can go? That's right. Where and anywhere that people can go to see Anunnaki artifacts?
Well, Sumerian artifacts. Well, some of the handiwork of the Anunnaki, if one wants to see them, you can see them in Giza in Egypt, the Great Pyramid. You can see them at Baalbek in Lebanon. You can see them in some places in South America. The list goes on, and they're all described in my books. But as far as the Sumerian or other artifacts in which the Anunnaki and their handiwork and what they did are mentioned or are depicted, yes. It's in the British Museum, it's in the museum in Berlin, it's in the Louvre in Paris, it's in the museum in New York, it's in the University Museum in Philadelphia, and so on and on.
But there is no one museum dedicated specifically to the Anunnaki relics or the Sumerian relics.
If you mean that, is there a purely Sumerian museum?
That was the question.
No, there is not. But the artifacts can be seen in so many of the other leading museums.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's go to the first time caller line. Where are you calling from, please? Hello? First time caller. Are you there? Going once. Going twice. Forget it. Wild card line. Where are you calling from, please?
Hi.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Dino from Montreal, Canada.
Yes, sir.
I would like to ask, is the language of the Anunnakis related in any way to the European, Indo-European languages?
Well, what language the Anunnaki themselves spoke, we do not know. We know what language the Sumerians spoke, or rather, what language they wrote down. And as the previous caller just mentioned, it is mostly similar to presently existing three languages, Finnish, Hungarian, and Basque. Otherwise, it does not belong to any known language group and not to the Indo-European.
Okay, do you draw a line between the Sumerian tablets and what the Anunnaki spoke?
Yes, well, what language they spoke among themselves, we really don't know.
Okay. Let's go to the international line. Where are you calling from, please?
I'm calling from Henderson, Nevada.
On the international line? Okay. Some people say Henderson is out of this world, but go ahead. What's your first name, sir?
My name's John Pope.
Yeah, John.
I have a question for Zechariah Sitchin about, in any of his books, I've only read two, does he explain who Yahweh is?
Yes.
Yes?
Divine Encounters.
Right.
Okay, that's the answer to your question, sir. Thank you. Let's go west of the Rockies. Hi, where are you calling from, please? Hello? West of the Rockies. Going once, going twice. That's it. Sorry. First time caller line, where are you calling from, please?
Okay, I'm in Mississippi.
Yes, sir. I hope you didn't have too much damage where you were.
No.
Okay.
No.
What's your first name, please?
Jim.
Okay, Jim. What's your question for Zechariah?
Why we have not been revisited in the degree that the Sumerians were visited, You know, why do they pick such an antiquity in time, and does he think they will return? You see what I'm saying?
Yep, I mean, we understand.
Yes, we
understand.
Yeah. We have been revisited, and may I disclose it, really?
Yep.
We will be revisited.
We will be, because there's a cycle that comes around. Is that correct?
Well, the answer is we will be revisited.
Take that for what it's worth. Anytime soon?
Well, in some people's lifetimes.
Well, that's pretty soon, as far as I'm concerned. All right, sir. Let's move along here. The wild card line. Where are you calling from, please?
Hi, yeah, this is Travis. I'm calling from Hunt, Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Travis.
How y'all doing? It's good to actually speak with you, Hilly. It's a rare thing to hear your voice, so it's nice. And,
thank you.
I have a brief question. Actually, it's more of a philosophical conundrum to pose to Mr. Sitchin. And that is, if God or whatever the singularity is truly omnipotent and knows all future, past, and everything, it seems to me that that would negate his or its existence to know everything. And I just kind of wanted to know what his, Mr. Sitchin's take would be on that.
Well, I cannot aspire or even pretend that I can read God's mind, but the God with a capital G is the creator of all, and going back again to the Sumerians, they believed that everything has been preordained. They actually distinguished between which we don't in English or even in German or other languages, between fate and destiny. They believe that, and that's what the Anunnaki told them, that there's a destiny for everything, a destiny for planets, a destiny for our solar system, and a destiny for kings, and a destiny for individuals. But within that destiny, there's something called fate, which is something that is controlled, can be changed by free will. So we are born and we die. That's destiny, the destiny of human mortals. But within that range, within that space, there's something called fate, which can be affected by what we do, what we don't do, by free will, by prayer, by being good, by being bad, etc. So there is some kind of overall plan, but within that overall plan, things are changeable.
You don't opt to speak for God, Zechariah?
No, I said I don't.
I know. It's easy there.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the international line. Where are you calling from, please?
San Francisco.
That's pretty international.
Yeah.
What's your first name, sir?
That's Mike.
Mike, all right, go ahead. What's your question?
Hey, my question was, Zechariah Sitchin, if he had considered that the 12th planet might actually be a very large spaceship traveling at near light speed, or a fleet of ships?
No, it's a planet.
Oh, it
is? A planet about three or so times the size of Earth.
Oh, that large. How do they get light? What do they use as a source of energy when they're away from the sun?
Well, the sun is not the only source of energy or heat or warmth on planets. Most planets, even in our own solar system, have internal energy from nuclear materials. The key question is, does the planet have an atmosphere or not? And that leads to many other aspects of the story. And hopefully, if you read the books, you'll find the answer. But the answer to your first and important question is, it's not a spaceship, it's a planet.
Well, I'm sorry, we've run out of time here, Professor Sitchin, and I'm a little nonplussed, but I appreciate your being on the program and taking the time.
It's my pleasure.
When is your 11th book coming out?
11th or 12th, depends how you count. Well, it's a slow process because it's a very, very significant book, at least significant as the first one. It'll deal with touchy subjects such as...
Okay, I'm sorry, but I've got to cut you off here. I'm done. Hilly Rose.